Good morning again, Council. All right, we'll first take up Ford versus Commonwealth. Mr. Armstrong? You want to reserve any rebuttal?
I would like to reserve rebuttal.
How much?
2 minutes.
2 minutes? All right, so you may proceed.
Thank you. Your Honor, may I please the court, my name is Stephen Armstrong, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Spencer Lee Ford, from his conviction of aggravated malicious wounding out of the Chesterfield County Circuit Court. Your Honor, I'd like to focus my argument today on assignment of error number one, which is that the Circuit Court clerk's inability to certify the record as complete and accurate, as well as the clerk's declaration that certain portions may be false, has deprived Mr. Ford of his right of due process, specifically his right to an appellate review of the Circuit Court's actions as required under Virginia law, the Virginia Constitution, and the Constitution of the United States. This honorable court has been denied the opportunity for any meaningful review of the appellant's record.
How do we know that?
Well, Judge,
and what's the prejudice?
I'll tell you, Your Honor, the prejudice is that this court has been established to review the decisions and the record of the lower court. And the clerk of that court, who was charged by statute in maintaining and certifying that record, has said that she cannot. And that not only has she said she can't certify it, the disclaimer on the cover letter to the court also states that portions may be false. So in effect, Your Honors, not only is she saying I can't provide the court.
Is that limited to this case, or is that what the clerk did for every case?
Your Honor, I can only speak to this case. It's my understanding, and again, I'll step back for a moment from my argument, and I can't speak with any authority on what precipitated this. I know there was some political maneuvering within the court system I can't speak to. However, when I was assigned to this case on appeal, I was not counsel at trial. I did notice the first thing, and that was the declaration from the court that says, I can't certify this record.
Well, now, the certification went only to exhibits, didn't it? It doesn't go to the record.
Your Honor, it says here that Judge, she has a preamble in the cover letter that says the court is unable to certify that the contents, table of contents, and the records attached thereto constitute a true and complete record on appeal. So she covers all her bases, not just the table of contents or the records or exhibits, but a true and complete record. And then she goes on to further stipulate that she can only attest to the following, and that is that her office, that the records were not lodged with her office, that she and her office have no knowledge of the case records or exhibits. The clerk has no knowledge as to the authenticity, labeling, description of any exhibit or document presented, and this again, Judge, I think we rest most of our case on, that certain names or signatures purported to be that of the clerk or the deputy clerk or any of the record itself may be false and affixed to records or exhibits without authority to act on behalf of the clerk. And that's important, Judge, Your Honors, because Supreme Court rules Supreme Court 5A7, 5A10, clearly state it's the duty of the clerk to prepare, transmit, and certify the record. If we don't...
Isn't it also the duty of the appellant to provide a record for the appellate court?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the appellant, who has been judicially declared indigent and is currently incarcerated in a facility, has no opportunity to do that. When the circuit court clerk cannot provide the documentation and in fact says they may be fraudulent, then the appellant is left with no recourse.
Well, what relief would you request?
Well, Judge, and I'll tell you, the only way to allow Mr. Ford due process is two ways, and this actually has come before the court in the past. The court may either summons the clerk before this court under Virginia Code 801.675.4, or remand the case for a new trial in which a proper and accurate record may be made.
Well, can't you remand it to the trial court to certify the record by statute?
That may be an option available to this court, Your Honor. In the case law that I've cited in my brief, those were the two options that we rely on to either bring the circuit court clerk before the court to make the modification, certify, or to remand for a new trial.
Is it your understanding that though that's what the clerk's office may still be doing there, so if it's remanded, it would just come back with the same stipulation or same qualification?
Short answer, no, Your Honor. My understanding is that the clerk in this case is no longer the clerk. There is an interim clerk. There will be
but
new elections.
The interim
next
clerk
month.
Is doing something similar.
No, Your Honor. I'll backtrack.
I'm just asking because
exactly, Your Honor. The interim clerk is basically said in her preparations, because I have other appeals pending, that her office no longer does what the old office used to do. However, as these records come from the circuit court, they are deemed to be accurate. It's basically her position, and which probably is what this clerk should have done. And that may have been sufficient. We would still argue it wasn't.
Well, why is it sufficient anyway? Because you haven't told us what's missing or where you're prejudiced. It's more of a theoretical thing, right?
Yes.
And then second, you've got exhibits that are initialed by the judge, and you've got a transcript that was filed as it's supposed to be filed, and that doesn't require the clerk to certify. So why, given the transcripts and the initialed exhibits by the judge, why don't we really, and no argument about what's missing, why don't we have something that's perfectly adequate?
And Your Honor, to answer that question, it would be impossible for Mr. Ford to prove a negative. We can't prove what's missing when we don't know what's missing. And the clerk has not just said, I can't certify this. She has gone that extra step to say, it may be fraudulent. Things, portions of exhibits may be false. There may not be complete, all the exhibits may not be in the record.
So you mean that would counter the judge's initials on the exhibits?
Well, Judge, procedurally, our position is this. Without the certified and accurate record as provided for by law, this court can no more hear this appeal on its merits than if counsel for the appellant had failed to comply with any of the other rules of the court and done his part in preserving and preparing the record. However, in this case, the party that has failed to comply with the rules was the duly elected constitutional officer in Chesterfield County. And that has substantially burdened my client as far, and this court. It's denied this court an opportunity for any meaningful review.
Well, where do you cite, what case law do you cite that's the effect of this failure to certify? Clearly there's, you know, the rules say that the clerk shall certify, but where is there case law, I appreciate if you can help me with it because I couldn't find it, that said, all right, here's the consequence of that.
Well, and Your Honor, we do cite to the rule. This is statutory. She has to do this.
Right.
But we also cite in our brief to both the due process violations under the 5th and 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The case law that I cite in my brief provides remedies as far as hailing the clerk before the court or remanding. But as to specific case law as to his injury, I do not have that. We, again, are relying on the fact that the court, no matter the merits of the rest accounts 2 and 3 of our brief, without the record, without a complete record, and with the constitutional officers declaring that it may be fraudulent, it just cannot go before the court. The court would not be able to determine based on not just an incomplete record, but what may be declared a fraudulent record by the clerk herself.
But do you have case law that says we don't have jurisdiction to decide this now?
Only that our position citing the U.S. Constitution and the rules of the Supreme Court. I don't have case law that says the Court of Appeals cannot hear it. Our position is that you would be at a great disadvantage and thus my client would be affected because you don't have a certified record. You don't have a complete record as declared by the clerk herself. And Judge, I can cite to the cases that we cite in the brief, but in the present case, the appellant, Mr. Ford, and by extension his counsel, has done everything that we can to see a complete and certified record. The clerk of the trial court has stated that a complete and accurate record simply does not exist. So that would be our position today, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, or good afternoon, as it were. May it please the court, Rosemary Bourne on behalf of the appellee of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Of course, the problem with this is that in any appeal, you know, parts of the record might not be relevant to the issues presented on appeal, to the assignment of error presented on appeal. And here, the letter in question says that the clerk of this court is unable to certify that the compiled record of exhibits, and here we're referring to exhibits in this case, not the transcript, which was certified by the court reporter, for the aforementioned criminal case constitutes the true and complete record of exhibits. Well, of course, none of these exhibits might be relevant at all to his assignment of error. And the defendant was present at trial with counsel and certainly knew what exhibits were entered into evidence and had an opportunity at that time to see those exhibits and see whether or not those exhibits match the exhibits that are now in the appendix in this case, which the Commonwealth did not object to as being inaccurate. I mean, we don't have any problem with the exhibits that he has put into the appendix.
Were the exhibits properly initialed or by the judge?
Yes, and under the presumption of regularity that the judge initialed these in this case, we would argue that there is no problem with these exhibits, and beyond that, he has not identified why these exhibits are necessary to his arguments, his other arguments on appeal in this case. There might be an exhibit, for example, in a case that has nothing to do with a particular assignment of error presented. And if there were a problem with that exhibit, it can't be the law that then therefore you get a new trial just because an exhibit that has nothing to do with the particular issue you present has a problem with it.
If we agreed with the argument of the appellant, what would be the remedy?
I mean, I agree that sending it back to have it recertified by the current clerk. I mean, part of the problem here too, Your Honor, is that under the rule and case law, the trial court should have been given the opportunity to deal with this situation, and there were mechanisms at the defendant's disposal, if there were problems with these exhibits, to get this issue back in front of the trial court so that the trial court could have certified that these exhibits were accurate. But none of those opportunities were taken advantage of. So now we find ourselves on appeal trying to deal with something that should have been dealt with at the trial court level.
And the appellant has the duty to provide us with
that's exactly right.
With a full record.
But if there was a problem that he could identify, then he could have gone back and said, hey, look, this picture isn't the same picture that was introduced. I was there during the trial. This other picture was introduced. Somehow it got substituted in the clerk's office. That could have been raised to the trial court and could have been dealt with there. So now we're denied the opportunity to even be able to explain how the record is accurate because it has not been identified what is inaccurate at this point or how it's even relevant to the issues presented on appeal. But I would agree, Your Honor, I guess to get back to answering your question, that the remedy here should not be a new trial. The remedy here, if a remedy is necessary, which I would not agree that it is, should be that it goes back to the clerk who is there now to try to, you know, certify or have them certify whether this record is accurate, because the court has the ability to do that.
Are you familiar with the Blue case from the Supreme Court 2012?
I'm not familiar with that.
That seemed to be a case in which the Supreme Court addressed the issue of one transcript that was omitted from the record, and apparently the majority of the court held that the trial court retained authority even after 21 days to deal with correcting the record.
And I think that is in accordance with the rules and the, I think some of the other cases that we cited on brief, that the trial court can deal with these issues and that these issues should be presented to the trial court. Of course, this is different, and I would not agree that the cases that he cites are germane to this issue, because when we're dealing with a transcript problem, it's pretty clear if you don't have a transcript that deals with some part of the appeal that you can't even cite to the transcript, that there may be prejudice under those circumstances. But when we're
clearly
talking,
her disclaimer, the clerk's disclaimer, only had to do with exhibits.
That's correct. That's my reading of it. I mean, this is dealing with exhibits. It's not dealing with the transcript where we don't really know what's in the transcript and that there may be something that's not germane. He saw these exhibits at trial and could have objected if there was
a
problem.
And doesn't the transcript of the proceedings itself identify the exhibits?
Yes,
by
it does.
Number,
yes.
And aren't all of those numbers in the record?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, I went through all of them in my brief. I think exhibits A, or maybe one, and I can't recall off the top of my head, but those were photographs. Then there was a box cutter, and then there were some other photographs. So exhibits A or one, as it were photographs. Exhibit B or two was a box cutter, and exhibits three were also photographs, and they were identified in the transcript by someone who could authenticate what they were. They were introduced and they were marked, apparently, by the judge, Judge Luke, who is a sitting substitute judge and has the same initials that were written on these exhibits. So, because they were certainly identified and they appear to be the same things that are what is in the appendix at this point, and it's hard to know how really a box cutter and photographs could be altered in such a way. I mean, we're not talking about documents that have some kind of ability to be forged or something like that. We're talking about photographs that were identified and described as injuries that this woman had, which she certainly testified to in great detail. And the box cutter, I mean, how is that relevant to any of these issues on appeal? But unless the court has further questions for me, I would just ask that you affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Bourne. Mr. Armstrong, you have 7 minutes left.
Thank you, Judge. I'll tell the court, just as a matter of housekeeping, the clerk's certification is two parts. The first one is identified as record and table of contents, and the second one identifies exhibits. So while the Commonwealth has been focusing on exhibits and everything she said in regards to exhibit, I would certainly concede, the very first page deals with criminal record on appeal and table of contents. And that very first sentence says, this circuit court is unable to certify that the table of contents and records attached thereto constitute a true and complete record on appeal. It doesn't get any clearer than that. The second page does talk about exhibits. And again, we concede the point there with the caveat that we can't really complain about exhibits we don't have because they're not listed. But again, to the Commonwealth's point, she's overlooking the first page where it talks about the record itself. And in that record, exhibits are a part of. So yes, we contend that there may be exhibits missing. We don't know. But the entirety of the record is what is at issue here today, judges.
Are you familiar with the Blue case?
And Your Honor, I heard that. I was not familiar with it. I am familiar with the, as we cited in the brief, the Cannabis versus Cunningham. It's a 1965 case where the Supreme Court stated that refusal to provide the indigent defendant with a free transcript constitutes a denial of fundamental rights. And in that case, if denial of transcript was a constitutional rights error, what about the entirety of the record? Certainly, the clerk of the trial court's failure to create, maintain, certify, and transmit a reliable record for this court would be a violation of Mr. Ford's constitutional rights. And again, going back to the Commonwealth's argument on exhibits, she talks about that there might not be, it might not be relevant, might not be. I hope the might not is not the standard before the court, and the Commonwealth's relying or position that the incarcerated indigent defendant, he's got to fix this. We've got the elected constitutional officer who was charged by statute with completing certain duties for this court, that the man locked up in a prison has to complete the record, and by extension, me, when, again, Your Honor, we would fall back to the statutory duties of the Commonwealth.
How complicated is it? You file a motion with the trial court asking the trial court to certify the record since the clerk won't do it.
Well, and Judge, when we received this, that was an option that was presented, perhaps even a writ of mandamus. But as we are here today, Judge, the clerk has not certified, and then she goes further to say that it may not be complete, it may be false. So that is what Mr. Ford is dealing with.
But you didn't answer my question. Why didn't you file a motion before the trial court?
That could have been done, Your Honor. That was not done.
Okay.
And we concede that. That may have been an option. There may have been any other number of options. That was one that certainly could have been. We did not do. We simply fell back on the position that the court is in error. And if this court finds that the trial court, specifically the clerk of the trial court, had failed to create, maintain an accurate record of the proceedings, as required by law, the case against Mr. Ford should be remanded for a new trial and then be subjected to a meaningful appellate review. And the alternative, if the court finds that jeopardy is already attached, barring a new trial under the Fifth Amendment, to be dismissed. Other than that, Your Honor, the other remedy would be to bring the clerk before the court to certify or make the record complete.
Weren't the trial transcript and the exhibits, as we talked about a little earlier, weren't they properly made part of the record, though, under Rules 5A7 and 5A8? Transcript and the exhibits.
Under those rules, Your Honor, yes. However, when it gets to the circuit court clerk's office and she says no, that's what we fall back on.
Well, Rule 5A10 certainly says that the circuit court shall certify that the record's true and complete when it's transmitted up to this court. But what statute or rule gives the circuit court clerk the authority to refuse to certify?
None that I'm aware of, Your Honor. But she did in this case, and then she said they may be fraudulent. And then that's where Mr. Ford is. Thank you.
All right, we'll greet counsel and then take up Nationwide.